I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Rick Duras. Rick is the founder of CopyRanger.com. He's one of the top pay-for-performance copywriters in the country. Behind the scenes, he's responsible for some of the biggest digital marketing campaigns and celebrities, whose products include supplements, various info products, seminars, and coaching services. Rick, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on today.
How are you, David?
I'm good. Rick, can we start off by you talking a little bit about your background and how you ended up in your current business?
All right. I started out as a software prodigy. So back when I was 16, I won a scholarship for writing a computer program, and I was really good at that. And I got jobs and consulting and all these kind of things, and opened up my own systems software development firm. And I grew that for probably the first 25 years of my life. And I had a lot of success in it. I've written books, and I did a lot of big projects for a lot of big companies, a lot of government, you know, just normal stuff as you're growing an IT firm. And then we were going great guns, and we were preparing for, I don't know if you remember, David, but it was Y2K.
Oh yeah, you know? I do remember it well. Everybody was, there was like doomsday scenarios of what was going to happen to everybody's system.
Yes, doomsday scenarios, and I was in the thick of it, and I was actually guiding a lot of, you know, big companies about, you know, how they should plan for this and, you know, that kind of thing. And we had a number of systems out there. We developed mission critical systems, which are designed not to go down, ever.
Right. And by the way, for listeners who are too young to remember what Y2K is, it was when we changed from 1999 to 2000. The way code was written, there were all these possibilities of not being able to recognize the year.
Right. And so as it got closer and closer, you can imagine my stress levels. My stress was like off the charts. And, you know, I really didn't know what to do, quite frankly. I was in, like, we were, you know, the entire world was in like uncharted waters. All I knew is that the people that we had developed systems for kept threatening, going, we have to be up on January 1st. We have to be able to ship product. We have to be able to do our services and our products. And I'm going, oh my goodness, they're putting all the stress on me as if I'm going to be able to relieve any of it. And so Y2K came and went, and for the most part, except for one particular company, which happened to have been the very first company I ever started doing business with way back 25 years earlier. I would keep my clients forever. Anyway, the end result was I got sued. And you know, what do you do when that kind of thing happens? And so I ended up having like a nervous breakdown. Like a true nervous breakdown after that. I was like, oh my goodness, this is terrible. And so out of that, I took 2 years off. The business was sold off, everything was dispersed. And I took 2 years off just to sort of mentally and spiritually, you know, recuperate, rejuvenate. And once, and about 2 years later after this, I started to get my entrepreneurial spirit back. And I went to see one of the guys that helped me build the company. It was a guy named Jay Abraham. And Jay is known for being a marketing genius. He's helped turn around all sorts of companies. I had brought him in years earlier in my company, and he's part of the reason why I'm talking to you today, because, you know, one of his strategies was to you know, position yourself as an expert. And this was before everybody else was, you know, trying to do that. This is back in the 90s. Anyway, so I called him up and we hung out together for a few days, and we said, well, we should do something. This would be cool. And so I started hanging out with him, and eventually I started, you know, collaborating with him on all sorts of different projects and marketing projects. And it was really good. And, you know, I became, a really good copywriter. Now, I'd been a copywriter previously because I focused on my own business, but here I was writing copy for other people on, you know, just, you know, people in different markets, wonderful niches and industries where I had no idea that such things existed. And we would come up with all sorts of things to offer people, you know, just services, products, things like that. And so it was like a free for all in terms of marketing ideas and businesses. And that's how I got started. And I just kept doing that. And eventually Jay and I parted company, but I went out and I started Copy Ranger, and I've just been doing all sorts of interesting things for people behind the scenes. And that's what I'm doing today.
You know, you touched on something that I hear a lot, which is the stress of being in charge of a business. And very often, just like you've experienced, things go along just fine, and then all of a sudden, something happens. Sometimes it's something unexpected. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about your mindset at the time, and maybe how you felt going through this, and how you felt taking, as you said, taking time off and chopping wood.
I was in a really dark place at the time, just for, you know, just because of the stress of it all. You'd think I'd get relieved, but then, you know, getting you know, sued, I had a whole new set of problems to deal with. But at the time, I was sort of wrapped up in my own little world, and I really wasn't paying a whole lot of attention because to everything else that was going on. And I just felt like, you know, at some point, and I'm being very candid with you when I say, you know, sometimes you just want to crawl up into a fetal position and pull the covers over your head in the morning and not want to get out of bed all day. And that's a very scary and lonely place to be. And I've been there. I've been there a couple of different times. I mean, one of my first businesses, for reasons that I wasn't responsible for, went out of business. I was vice president of a small systems development company that went out of business in the first, my first recession, which was in 1980-81. And I was just like, oh my goodness, what do I do? How do I pull out of this one? And I think, you know, I don't really have answers other than to embrace what you're going through. A lot of people will try to, you know, avoid and, you know, medicate or, you know, somehow mentally or emotionally avoid what's painful. And I've learned over the last few years that what you really want to do is you sort of want to embrace it. And I know that sounds terrible to the person that's listening to this right now, because they're going, you know, screw you, I'm not going to do that because it's way too painful. But I'm going to tell you what's on the other side if you do, because there's a payoff. The payoff is a breakthrough. A payoff is a breakthrough that you haven't even begun to realize yet. And let me put it to you in a different way. I would have never gotten hooked up with Jay if I didn't go through my little dark night of the soul. I would have never have done that. And I would have, I mean, you know, I had brought him on in my own company, but here I was working and collaborating with him shoulder to shoulder, and I was just like, hey, you know, this is pretty cool. This might even be cooler than what I was doing before. And so I think that, and I'm going to give the reader a lot of credit right now. You're where you're at right now because you're incredibly, incredibly creative. You wouldn't be listening to this type of thing right now unless you are the caliber of person that has the resourcefulness and the creativity and the internal fortitude to be able to get out of it. Right now, you're listening to Splashing the Plateau because you're looking for answers. Well, I'm going to give you just one. And that one is embrace what you're going through, because what will happen is you'll get that breakthrough. Okay? But as the conversation goes on, I think what may end up happening is you're expecting the breakthrough in the wrong place. It's going to come from where you least expect it. There's a famous Greek philosopher. His name was Heraclitus, and he said something to the effect of, if you do not expect it, you will not find the unexpected, for it is hard to find and difficult. Now, I didn't say that. Heraclitus said it, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. So we're as human beings, we're still suffering with the same challenges, okay, but just with a different set of circumstances. But in my mind, it is more than being open to it. It's more than expecting it. It's demanding it. But when you demand it, you're demanding more from yourself than you are from the actual breakthrough.
You know, Rick, this reminds me of some news items that I've heard recently about, for those of us who are parents, in our overachieving culture, trying to do too much to protect our kids from failure or pain, and not allowing them to experience the downs in life as well as the ups. And right, and what does that do? How does that prepare them for what they're going to have to deal with as they grow up and as they become adults?
That's there's this whole idea of having to, I hear right now there, and not to digress, but there are government agencies that are now taking kids, just looking at them playing in the playground without parent supervision. They're taking them into custody, taking them down to the police station, and then calling the parents going, "We have your kids." And it's a real wake-up call for those parents. And they don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to process it. And so those parents are actually trying to do this, but there's a lot of evil in the world. And so what do you do? I mean, it's a balancing act. And I can see both sides of the conversation. It's crystal clear to me that, the world is a scarier place today. And there's a lot more stuff going on that people don't have any control over, and they're trying to control things. And I can appreciate that. By the same token, not to take anything away from that side of the conversation, you've got to be able to make mistakes. Mistakes are an essential element to making stuff happen in your life, in your company, and you should expect those every bit as much as you should expect the breakthrough.
Absolutely.
I live with my mistakes every day. I make several big ones every day. And it's deliberate. It's not that they're intentional. It's deliberately engineered into the conversation, into my work. And it's quite frankly, it's a wonderful way to sort of try stuff out. There's two people that you want to look at for role models in your life. One for me was Nikola Tesla. The other one was Thomas Edison. Both of these people were arch enemies, as you probably are aware.
Yes.
But Thomas Edison, he was a very deliberate, very pragmatic, very methodical person. And what he would do is he would try a bunch of stuff. You know, his most famous quote of all is, "I just found 9,999 ways that didn't work," when he was talking about his electric light bulb. How did he find it? He found out everything else that didn't work, and then he tried tungsten, you know, as a filament. And so, so that idea that mistakes, those 9,998 previous ones led to the one that is the breakthrough, is a very methodical, and you could use that. There's definitely a if you read any books on creativity, they'll all tell you, you need to go travel. You need to do something different. You need to try different things that you wouldn't normally have tried before. And, you know, I've tried to incorporate that kind of thinking into my own work, where I would try stuff that wouldn't necessarily think that would work, but all of a sudden it's sort of like, holy cow, I never thought that would work. In fact, I would have bet against it. And so I'll just be trying different things. And, you know, I have no ego. I'm lucky, okay? And I'm going to tell you, I mean, part of my process is I sit behind the scenes of a lot of projects, and it's very deliberate for several reasons. I don't like to, this is a very rare conversation for me to have, where I'm actually, you know, out in public and, you know, trying to help people. I'm normally helping people behind the scenes. And what makes it that way for me is, one, the markets I'm in are extremely competitive. So like, if you said, well, what's a competitive market? Well, weight loss is a competitive market. Everybody and their brother knows that there is a huge market out there when it comes to people who are overweight. There's a lot of emotion tied up into being overweight, whether the emotion is because of health reasons or it's because you want to be more attractive. Doesn't matter. Either way works. But there is this huge market out there, and everybody's trying to get their piece of it. I mean, even people like Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil has the number one book on Amazon, if you can believe it, for weight loss. What does he have to do with weight loss? Heck if I know. But he's out there. You're laughing.
Yeah, no, it's... I know it's true.
So in my work, I want to fail. I deliberately want to fail. I want to try stuff, but I don't necessarily want it to be public for two reasons. One, if it fails, I want to bury the thing quickly. I'm human, right? I don't want my mistakes public, okay? And I make a lot of them, quite frankly. And it's, like I said, it's engineered into the process. But on the other hand, if it succeeds, I don't want people to know that I was responsible for it, because people stalk me. I have people that are following me, even though I'm trying my best not to be known. And so it's very competitive, and I just happen to have a knack for doing stuff that is really creative in ways that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate.
So are you suggesting that in order to push the envelope and set the stage to be able to find the unexpected, that you need to take a somewhat contrarian approach to moving forward in your career, in business, in life, to solving problems?
I like the word contrarian. if the word fits for you, then you should do it. Okay? I'm more about creating an environment for yourself where you can succeed. So at the foundation of this creativity or this entrepreneurial activity, you've got to create an environment for yourself. And whether that environment is a social network or whether it's a physical network or whether it's an emotional, you know, state of being so that you can be your most productive, doesn't matter to me. Do it all. Do one of it. I don't care. I think the idea of you putting yourself in an environment for you to do your best work and not have to look over your shoulder and not have to worry about other people's, what other people think at the time you're trying to create, I think that's a very safe, almost sacred place for you to be as an entrepreneur. So that you don't have to worry about people, you know, hating on you online and all this kind of stuff, you know, talking about, you know, how you're, you know, your stuff doesn't work or whatever it is that you're going through at the time. And I see it every day where, you know, stuff doesn't fly and stuff's a dud, whatever it is. I'm saying you don't have to show it. Show it when you're ready to show it. You know, I mean, unless you're at that stage in your career where your brand is established and it doesn't matter because, hey, you know, everybody has a dud once in a while, you know.
Oh, it always matters. As a matter of fact, I find that the more publicly successful people they are, the more they worry about what they're putting out there.
They obsess over it.
Holy yes, cow. Yes. Right. So, I mean, one of the schools of thought in the online product world is if you're not embarrassed by the first thing that you've released, you've waited too long to release it.
That's an interesting.
Right, particularly people who are delivering services online.
Yeah. Well, there's an element there of like everything has a germ of truth, right? It's sort of like you start where you are, and it doesn't matter, just as long as you're in action. Like action, you know, preempts just thinking about stuff. Just to get stuff out there to show you the way. It makes sense at some level, but again, you know, once you get it, you want to bury it. I mean, nobody wants to go look at that stuff that you did way long time ago. It's just kind of painful. Does that make sense or no?
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of action, let's actually shift the conversation, just talk a little bit about action. What do you find it takes to be consistent about taking action, particularly when things go wrong? These mistakes that you're talking about happen. That's where people often get stymied and they stop taking action. How do you create a system or mechanism to ensure that you will take as much action as possible so you can keep moving forward?
You know, Tony Robbins has this one, you know, phrase he calls massive action. Another gentleman out on the in the market, personal development, has another phrase. He calls it like 10x. You want to 10x everything. I have a client who 3x's everything, you know, and he teaches his people that you gotta, you know, in order to absorb the mistakes, you've got to be doing double, triple, 10 times what would normally have been appropriate in the past. And quite frankly, there's no reason why you can't do that today. And I know that sounds like I'm challenging you or challenging, you know, whoever's listening, but there is literally no reason why you can't. If you're thinking about labor, hey, there's virtual assistants coming out of the woodwork online that are just, I get a request every couple of days, you know, that says, hey, can I be your personal assistant? Can I be your virtual assistant? I can do this and that and these and those. And I'm going, well, good to know, but I don't have a need right now, but I'll keep you in my Rolodex. The idea that you know, you're limited by technology. Right now, you know, people, you know, I'm a copywriter, and people think, oh, you know, he's writing and he's working, he's writing and he's working. I actually don't write all that much. I mean, I write a lot, but I don't write that much comparatively. What I do is I write in bursts. I crush it when it's time to crank stuff out. It's because I have literally immersed myself in the market and I can't hold back. And so it's very easy for me to come up with 10 times the content and at the same time create all these, for lack of a better term, premeditated mistakes. In other words, one in copywriting, I don't know if you're aware, David, but there's this logical idea that says if you want one good headline, you got to come up with 100. Are you familiar with that or not?
I am not, no.
Okay. Rather than thinking this one, you know, this one piece of writing is going to make or break your career, come up with 10 different pieces of writing and let the market decide.
Right.
Okay. This is the foundation of what's happening on the internet today, where the writing is actually cheap. It's what's really what you're paying for is a breakthrough idea, an idea that nobody else has ever had before, a combination of different components that you somehow, you know, amalgamate together, and you've created something new. And there's nothing new under the sun, and you know, everybody knows that, but there are new things, either personalities that are, you know, that are taking on new products, or new products that are being, you know, synthesized out of old ideas or 19th or 20th century ideas. It's happening, you know, at the speed of light right now. And so there's no lack of writing. There's no lack of content. Where we're struggling is having quality. Where we're struggling is having that one idea that's going to change somebody's life. And that's what really, you know, as a copywriter, I have the privilege of doing. You know, there's a product out there, and I'm able to create the right words that's going to tug at the right heartstrings that say that person's going to go, wow, I never thought about it like that. I really need to get that product.
Is your earlier work with systems, has that been part of the foundation of the process that you now use for copywriting?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes, in more ways than I can imagine. And the reason why is because when it comes to software, you change one thing, one character in your script or in your code, and what happens? The thing crashes. There's a level of perfectionism in terms of executing code that is required, that analytical, I've got to make sure everything works as anticipated. Okay? So that level of perfection translates for me over in copywriting, where I believe, and this is just a belief for me, that in order for my copy, my piece, to land for that person, everything's got to be perfect. It's a tough mindset for me personally, okay? Because it requires extraordinary sort of, okay, I got to make sure that all my emotional sequences are right. When I talk about emotional sequences, I'm talking about, you know, when you first see something that interests you, you don't slam them with the big benefit. Scares people away today.
Right.
They didn't used to back in the, you know, 40s, 50s. You led with the benefit. Today the market is very sophisticated. The big benefit, you can't slam them. You got to coax them into it. How do you coax them into it? With some little piece of curiosity. This little, you see it in some of these ads, right? I'm sure you've seen them. You know, one weird tip for losing 7 pounds in the next 10 days. What's that one weird tip? You know, little innocent piece of curiosity that leads you, and then takes you into this next thing, which takes you into this next thing. Next thing you know, they're talking about the benefits of this particular program. And you're going, wow, I never thought about it like that. Makes perfect sense to me. I'm hitting the buy button. And that's what happens online. But it all starts with one weird tip. So that's the emotional sequence of it. You're taking people from curiosity to some sort of attention, you know, getting device to building their interest, to fanning the flames, you know, all this kind of stuff. You're taking them through this whole chain of emotions till you finally get to the point where they're like that Pepsi commercial where you go, I gotta have it.
Actually, what I was wondering is that maybe we can close with an example that you've seen in the marketplace of someone who has led the audience through the sequence you're describing really well, so listeners would understand what you're talking about.
Well, okay. So let me expand on the example that I just gave you, okay? Because it's really sort of appropriate. Weight loss is an easy one because it's very, very, identifiable for a lot of people. I'll give you a curiosity piece. One piece of curiosity out there today that I was just reading that I'm going to use is a little news item. You wouldn't necessarily think twice about it, but if you put it in the right way, it's like, holy cow, the world's coming to an end when it comes to weight loss. What is that thing? Well, did you know that there are now more medically obese people out there than there are merely overweight people, David? There are 67 million obese people out there.
In the U.S.? This is in the U.S.?
In the U.S.
Wow.
Versus only 65. You can look this up. There's a study by the University of Washington. I'm not making these numbers up. It's an amazing factoid. Now, that little piece of information, if you're reading this, you're kind of going, well, am I obese? Am I overweight? Well, what if I put together a quiz that says, how do you know if you're medically obese? Something like that. And that's the start of it. You see this? Do you see the sort of, I'm popcorning ideas with you right now. It's sort of like, at the start of it, you go, how do I know? Does it make a difference? Sure, it makes a difference. So, and now they go take the quiz. They find out that they're, okay, let's say they're just overweight, but still you're going to have health problems. You're going to have these issues. You know, isn't there something you want to do about it? Well, now that you saw it, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, I really would. Well, what if I told you that there were just three foods that you can eat that would immediately you'd be able to see a measurable or at least three things you could do. What's one of those things? Interestingly, getting some sleep will help you lose weight. Well, that's a factoid in and of itself. Do you see how it's like building on it?
Yeah.
And so you're kind of going, how does sleeping help you lose weight? Well, look at it this way. One of the hormones in your body is, and you explain all this, okay? This is my job. You explain all this. You know, one of the hormones in your body is a hormone called cortisol. It is your fight or flight hormone. Would you say, on a day-to-day basis, that you're experiencing, you know, a certain amount of stress in your life? Your cortisol is probably coursing through your veins right now. And you make that very dramatic. You know, how would you like to reduce the cortisol, and as a result of reducing the cortisol, you'll start losing weight, because cortisol is directly attributed to creating belly fat. Again, I'm not making this stuff up. This is in science and that kind of thing. And so, is this helping, David?
Yeah, no. So it's pretty clear that there is a path that you are.
I'm taking people on, so that I'm trying to help them. I truly am, with all intentions. I'm not just trying to push a product on them. I want them to be educated to know that, hey, there's help for you. We're a lifeline. We can support you
in this endeavor called weight loss. And it doesn't matter whether you're medically obese or just overweight, this works for both. Are you sold?
Yeah. I'm ready to learn more. So yeah, that's a great example. So Rick, I know we could go on a lot longer, but we're running out of time. I wondered if you can tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
I have a website, and I'm really busy, so it looks like, you know, I'm, you know, an absentee owner, quite frankly. But it's called CopyRanger.com, and what I do on CopyRanger.com is really quite simple. It's just a placeholder for me to, you know, put up and say I'm here. But what I do is I collect articles from all around the internet when it comes to testing and copywriting and marketing and all those things that where you want to build your business online. And I've hired somebody to organize them. Every day we post 40, 50 articles from different resources around the world on the internet, and I just archive them because, again, you know, if you've got an idea, if there is something, let's talk for a second about social media. You know, you're looking for something in social media. Well, I've got a couple hundred articles out there you can sort of do a search on when it comes to social media, and I'm not saying you'll find it, but I'm saying there's a lot of ideas out there that for you to take and cherry pick from. And so that's what I've done. I've turned Copy Ranger into that kind of thing. Once in a while, I'll post an article I wrote myself, but it's rare. It's very rare. Go out to CopyRanger.com. If they want, you can reach me on Skype at CopyRanger, and I'll be glad to help you in whatever way I can. I'm very, unlike most people, I'm very accessible, you know, in copywriting. Usually they try and put up a firewall. I want to be hit with ideas. I want to be hit with problems. I don't know where the next idea will come from that I'm working on. And so I'm sort of letting, you know, the internet, the flow of things just sort of hit me on a day-to-day basis. And it all turns out. So hit me up on CopyRanger.com, or, you know, CopyRanger on Skype, and I'll be glad to help you in whatever way I can.
That's great. And it's great to know that there are so many resources that you have made available to everyone. So Rick, this has been a really fascinating discussion. It's interesting where the discussion has led. And I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Rick Duras, founder of CopyRanger.com. Thank you again, Rick, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.